Yeah, and I'm not even sure.
You don't get another chance to, and at some point you say, oh, turn off the recorder. That's fine too. So, but sometimes okay. People do that. They start going somewhere. They're like, I don't want this recorder. I said, okay, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Well, as much as, like I told you in the note, I was afraid I might overshare, but also I don't know that I want to be out there on the internet. I haven't ever been out there.
that's very true. People sometimes do get to oversharing, and then it's like you get to a certain point, it's like, yeah, this conversation won't be shared, which is absolutely fine.
Right, right. Well, then I'd rather have a good conversation that might involve things that can't be shared than
absolutely
try to censor myself or edit myself.
Now you mentioned that we spoke on the phone. I talk to a lot of people, so why don't you refresh my memory?
Well, it was probably about a year ago.
Okay.
And we tried to do this where we could see each other and hear each other, but my tablet wasn't cooperating.
Okay.
And you were very persistent, and we ended up just talking over the phone on my landline, actually, at my house. I don't know. I basically gave you my story some, and then also talked about other kind of spiritual stuff.
Well, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, I've had a couple of something in the last week. I've been listening to some Watchman Nee audiobooks on YouTube, and I read a lot of Watchman Nee a long time ago. Like I would say my biggest influence have been Watchman Nee, Bonhoeffer, and A.W. Tozer. And he quoted this verse in Psalm that, it's in Psalm 106 where, it's all about what God did for the Israelites and how they were basically kind of obstinate about it. And one of the verses is that he gave them their request, but sent leanness to their soul. And it kind of struck me as that kind of fits into the meaning crisis some. And one of my big problems is, and I have a few verses in the Bible that I kind of go back to again and again. And one is in Psalm 131 about, you know, my heart is not haughty and I don't concern myself with great or weighty matters, which is I think why I have a tendency for your stuff to listen to the rando conversations more than the thinky talky stuff.
Yep. Yep.
Because I have a really hard time. I don't have time to listen to as much as you put out. And two, it's kind of above my head kind of a lot, and I don't have time to follow up and catch up with it. So why don't I go back and kind of share where I came from?
Okay.
I know that I talked to you about this last year, but I was born and raised Missouri Synod Lutheran. And then I'm like the sixth of six children, a tag along. Another thing that kind of interests me in talking to you is I think we're both born in the same year, 63. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty much the same age. And in this weird tweener generation, you know, not baby boomer, not Gen X.
Yeah.
So exposure to both of the kind of big themes of those two generations, but not really part of them. And so as a tag along kid, came along 7 years after my next oldest sibling.
Wow.
And then my oldest sister is 13 years older than me. I have four older sisters. So it was like they got and obviously my mom and dad loved kids. There were six of us. And so it was like my sisters had a real life baby doll to take care of. So my mom always told me between the ages of being born and like three, she didn't think my feet ever hit the ground. it was unexpected and I was unexpected, but not unloved or unwanted.
Yeah.
Right. My mom had lost a child in between me and my next oldest sister. So that's a little bit of my like growing up background.
When, great story.
When my dad was like four, this was like mid to late 60s, he had a, what they called back then, he had a mental crisis, basically. Midlife crisis, or I can't even remember the terms that they used to use back then for it. And he stopped going to church. But he insisted, and he made us kids keep attending. My mom was faithful every Sunday, churchgoer. And so was I until I was about 36, 37 years old. So then, you know, I was catechized in the Lutheran church and to memorize basically the Luther's Small Catechism to pass. And then after high school, I got exposed to first C.S. Lewis, you know, Mere Christianity, The Great Divorce, the Narnia books, the science fiction books. And then after that, I started reading Bonhoeffer, The Cost of Discipleship, Life Together, which I've read over and over again. And then a little bit later, like around 30, I started reading A.W. Tozer. He's got The Pursuit of God. And that's a book that I've read over and over again. And I stopped going to Lutheran church. I started going to one of the larger mega churches, one of the denominations, the ones that have started in California, has branches everywhere, franchises everywhere, however you want to put it. And went to their school of ministry, kind of got exposed to how the sausage is made, which kind of turned me off to what goes on in those huge places. And also when my roommates got in sideways with the leadership. So I kind of became persona non grata. And I thought, well, see you later. I mean, I just started going to home fellowships. And growing up, I was pretty shy. Didn't really ever have any girlfriends. When I was 18, I started praying, asking God to help me find a wife. And when I was 36, that happened. So it took 18 years. But so I was going to a home fellowship. One day a woman walked in. I noticed her. Didn't talk to her. Next thing, she came with four kids in tow. And then I discovered that her husband had died tragically in a post-operative infection.
Oh my.
And then less than a year later, we were married. So I went from being single to being married
with four kids.
Four kids, and everybody had been through kind of a tragic situation, so there's trauma. And at that point, I'd stopped. After I had my experience with the mega church, I just stopped going. Although I didn't stop meeting with believers, and I had plenty of believer friends, but I wasn't doing anything kind of like institutional, and I'd kind of been really turned off to Church Inc., which is like America's version of church run like a business, and didn't like it. And very much different than what I grew up with, you know, the mainline denominations are run a lot differently. So I kind of just muddled through, you know, for 10 years. And finally I got to the point where I was at the end of my rope, and somehow or another, I heard about Celebrate Recovery, which was meeting at a church nearby, which is like Christian version of 12-step program.
Yeah.
But ironically produced by one of the biggest mega churches ever, Rick Warren's church.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But you know, I went one night, and basically it was like most 12-step meetings. Everybody was there because they knew they needed help, and that's where God led them, I guess. That's where he led me. I almost walked out, you know, but eventually I got help there and also met some good people there. That was like 2010. Did that for like 7 years. So that's kind of most or bits and parts of my story. Of course, I'm your age, so there's a lot more to it, obviously. But yeah. I just, in 2015, something happened where it was in the spring, all of our appliances started breaking. Like refrigerator died, dryer died, our phones died, a couple of other things. They just all kaput. And at this point, I was also trying to wean myself or go cold turkey from off of cell phones, a smartphone, because I knew it just was just occupying too much of my attention, especially in regard to my relationship with my wife, because, you know, we'd be in the same room and I'd be on my phone and she would say something to me and it was like I wasn't even there, which is not a good situation. It's just not good and it's very harmful. So after all this happened, the kind of like the last thing that happened was our house got broken into. And fortunately, all they took was maybe a couple of mobile devices and a tablet, and got into the drawer where I always threw all my change. So probably got a couple hundred dollars in change, but they didn't get anything valuable. And at that point, I was like, Lord, what is going on? So my wife had been praying about it, and she told me, I think he wants our attention. And then shortly thereafter, this is like 2016, I ran into or discovered Jordan Peterson. I saw him on Dave Rubin, where he talked about Pinocchio at the end and was moved by it. So that grabbed my attention. So I did watch quite a bit of him. I remember when you did the interview with him, but I didn't watch the whole interview. I only got about halfway through it. There's just too much, you know. I'm overwhelmed with how much there is these days, you know. I was curious yesterday, so I Googled how many videos are there on YouTube, and it's something like 800 million. And they estimate it would take 17,000 years to view them all.
Wow.
So that's like, you know, even, I don't know, 800 million, even 1/100, 8 million is more than a lifetime of somebody. Yeah. And, you know, as far as the meeting crisis goes, what I'm noticing is, you know, I can pop up YouTube on my TV and there's just a grid of videos, right? I could scroll all night. And last week it occurred to me that, you know, there used to be examples how the world is always getting small, right? And even small now, it's like I'm talking to you and we're 1,500 miles apart or whatever. And that was the trend. That was progress. The world's getting smaller. But it occurred to me that really with the internet, and this is over the last 20 years, we're getting a glimpse into how big the world really is, because it's exposing us to everything and we can't take it all in. So like in terms of thinking spiritually, it's like, oh, well, the Lord is aware of all of this all the time. How in the world? Because, you know, he knows everything about everybody, every thought, every emotion, what they're going through at the moment. You know, sometimes when I'm, and this has been for years, I drive down the road and see a homeless person on the street and kind of wonder what their story is. And I've worked some with homeless, and so I know that, you know, most of them have burned all the bridges, right? Everybody that loved them deeply, you know, and that's why they're there, right? But it just, So I've been struggling over the last couple of years, just having an overwhelmed, feeling overwhelmed. And, you know, the last 2 years has been unique, right? Nobody's ever experienced, nobody our age has experienced. I always heard about these worldwide things. You know, my parents knew World War II and World War I and II. There was a whole lot that led up to that. And then like a switch happened and it just happened. And I'm kind of feeling like that's kind of what the meaning crisis is about. All of this stuff is piled up and piled up and piled up and piled up. And people aren't even realizing what it's doing to them as it's doing. And I myself have realized that I'm not quite sure what it's doing, like especially in regard to my attention. And, you know, in 2016, I started saying, you know, the masks are dropping and everything just seems upside down, right? So then when I've been on YouTube and I've seen you or Pajot say things about the upside down world, it's like, oh, okay, it's not just me that's seeing this and imagining it, but understanding it is a different matter, and understanding how it affects myself and other people is a whole different matter. But I kind of know God knows, right? You know, you've heard people, you're talking to somebody and something happens and they throw up their hands, God knows, right? But to me, I had that phrase transformed too, because I realized, yeah, God actually does know. Another verse that I memorized a long time ago is the one in 1 Corinthians 13 that we see in a mirror dimly. And we know in part, but one day we shall know even as we are known. So it's kind of where I take my comfort. God knows me, even if I don't know myself. And it's something I discovered in Celebrate Recovery too, because it was like, with me and other people that I interacted with there, I realized I may not remember something, but God does remember it. So that helped me when I was struggling with something, knowing, okay, Lord, you know this, and you know how to help me get through this. So just help me follow you in it without worrying about the fact that I don't understand or that I just don't have a clue about something. I know God knows. And one other thing that I got exposed to when my kids were in school and was John Taylor Gatto. And I'm sure you know about him because you homeschooled. Like, and he's a homeschool icon.
Yep.
And so, and I read the underground history of American education. There's a lot of history in there that people don't know, especially about how our country developed, the education system developed. That's where I learned about Bernays and propaganda and how, you know, it's like there are people out there. It's like, to some people, it's tinfoil hat stuff, but at the same time, it's like they didn't hide it. It's like, this is what we're going to do. And basically, that's what they did. So a couple of years later, I read an article called The Gospel of Consumption. And it was in, I think, Orion magazine, which I just found it by, I don't know how I stumbled upon it, maybe through Gatto or something. But there was a quote in there by Charles Kettering, which I didn't know who he was, but he was like the head of R&D for General Motors. And he wrote an article called Keep the Consumer Dissatisfied, what they aim to do, right? With all the new, right? New. Right? And it's just hard to escape. I've told my wife, you know, if we weren't married, I might be in a monastery somewhere. But so that's kind of something I'm struggling with, how not to be overwhelmed and how not to just how to keep my eye on the ball and not pay attention to everything that's constantly drawing my attention. These devices that are basically engineered to keep people's attention. And so, I don't know. That's kind of my story. I don't know if, I guess that's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that's a huge thing.
And I, you know, I kind of, I would say lucked out, but I know luck has nothing to do with it. I was on my phone yesterday morning and I noticed there was an open spot. And I'm like, wait, is this really what this is? So I'm not sure why I'm talking to Paul today, but I'm going to call and talk to him because I kind of like the guy. And and I know that's because from what kind of what I've observed in you is you're a pastor, you know, and it's a pastor's heart. And that's a gift. And it's like what I notice when you talk to people is, and I've noticed this about other pastors that I've had, whether or not they've got the degree or are working in a church, is they know how to connect with people, ask questions, and relate, or to the degree that they can, right? Another thing I learned about, and you talk a lot about scale sometimes, and what I've discovered in my walk is that the places that I've been affected by most have been smaller scale, like a home group. Like in Celebrate Recovery, we had step studies that had 10 to 12 people around the table for a year, and kind of fits in. Jesus had 12 guys, and even within that, smaller groups at times, and very, you know, and occasionally larger groups, but not really. So the place that I've been touched the most is smaller settings, you know, where two or three are gathered kind of situations. Anyway, so that's all. Go ahead.
Oh, that's a great. That's a wonderful. That's a wonderful run you just had there. You're right about attention, and I think in some ways we've been in the middle of an attention arms race, and the phones, the screens, the Netflix, everything that they have found, you know, they have found increasing ways to penetrate the various defenses, the home, society, and to get our attention and hold our attention. And, you know, the people making the games are, you know, have used the same ideas that they've used for slot machines and how to keep you in a Vegas casino. I mean, make sure there are no windows, make sure there are no clocks, make it timeless, make it absolutely filled with stimulation, and just keep at you. And I think I forget. I was it was Peugeot's conversation with the with a Orthodox priest about masculinity. What struck me about that conversation was there are moments in there, despite his rather dismissive comment about Calvinists, there are moments in there that he sounded absolutely like a lot of Puritans. There's this one great Puritan piece where this Puritan pastor talks about, you know, the only way to handle something that has us is to have something stronger push it out. And that idea is so true on so many different levels. Jesus says it, you know, you can, and I'm sure you work this with Celebrate Recovery, you can, whatever has brought you to Celebrate Recovery, that demon can be expelled from the house. But if you don't fill the house with good things, it will come back with its friends, and it will re-inhabit the house. I have these sheds on the property that were put up when we had a daycare center here, and I have to keep the sheds locked even if there's nothing in them, because if I don't, homeless people will move into the sheds, and then I have another kind of problem. And so during our waking moments, we have the gift of attention, and there are more and more powers around us trying to hijack that gift. And the only way to combat it is to strengthen the healthy, objects of our attention. I'll say it that way, even though it's imperfect. When I was 25 years old, I didn't have any problem with gaining weight. Well, you know, just like almost every other man, the older you get, the testosterone does not flow like it did, and the weight just starts getting putting on. And so I'm not huge, but my doctor reminds me I'm not as small as I should be. So I've got a very diligent doctor, which is a good thing. And he's not oppressive, but he reminds me, you know, if you lose this weight, yada, yada, yada. So, and I notice one thing, that I can't keep junk food in my office. Because if I keep junk food in my office, it just keeps going in my mouth, and it's my hand that places it there. And so really the way to control the demons of junk food is to eat better food. And that's so true of the life of attention and the life of the mind, that now the difficulty, and I'll continue with the junk food analogy, is that this junk food, which is usually full of salt, sugar, and fat, of course, is built to hijack my systems that, according to evolutionary biologists, that prioritize salt, sugar, and fat, because in some imagined pristine wilderness where we imagine my body would have to eat, those things are very necessary and rather uncommon. So what we've done is we've just created all kinds of food that is high in salt, high in sugar, high in fat. And so I get this immediate reward, but it's a long-term problem. And that's exactly the same with, so I did the video there's, I released this morning, was about Andrew Tate and that YouTube algorithm. It sometimes I look at it and say it's the devil himself. So YouTube has all these shorts now because it wants to compete with TikTok. And I noticed that my shorts are completely inhabited by Andrew Tate and Manosphere videos, even after YouTube takes away his YouTube channel. And it's like, what kind of demon is running this show? You know, because if you get into so many of these shorts, it's just all of these, it's just sugar and fat, you know, it's like bang, 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 bang. And of course that's TikTok and doom scrolling and just bang, 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 bang. And you can just lose your life just hitting those things.
And as you were talking, it occurred to me, because I noticed this a few years ago, you know, in television, there are shows like Judge Judy or and even like Survivor and those things. And so I always said that Judge Judy was like vicarious confrontation. And I almost think it would be better for us if we were with an actual person having a confrontation than just taking in this vicarious, you know, confrontation vicariously. And that's what all the reality TV is about too. And you know, the phrase quality time comes to my mind, because we all have, you know, God's given us his gift of time, and we all have it, and how we spend it is another matter. And even the phrase spending time, you spend money and you spend time. So if you're just, television is like frittering away your money. It doesn't give you back anything. And I think this goes back to scale too. Spending time with a small group of people, or even just, a group that you can have conversations with, rather than watching somebody have a conversation. It kind of makes me think about all this stuff about how, quote, long form conversations on YouTube, that's the real good stuff. But I'm not so sure that it is. I mean, it's not, maybe it's
better than shorts, but
right, better than shorts. Maybe it's a can of pears as compared to a bag of potato chips for consumption, for eating. But it's still not as good as even, I mean, I think this is one-on-one. So we have each other's attention and we're not wasting our time. Even if I'm not quite sure why it happened that I was able to talk to you today, it's not going to be a waste of an hour.
No.
Which is what I liked about the last time I talked to you, because it's like, it didn't go, but you still were like, here, just call me, we'll talk, because that kind of makes me realize that you have an understanding of the value of just talking with people. And that's, I guess should be a required quality for somebody in your position.
Yeah.
Rather than just looking at it as a vocation. I don't think that, doesn't seem to me like you look at what you do as a vocation. You do this because you love people.
Well, it's the older definition of vocation. It's something, it's a holy calling rather than an occupation. I mean, just look at the difference between vocation, occupation, job. But no, I you're very right. I when I drove in this morning, even though we built the fence, that doesn't mean that we don't have homeless people, and they're just now outside the fence, and the fence has become a structure of their habitation. And so there was, I know the guy that's made himself a regular now on the steps, and he's talking to somebody else who I didn't know, but that's one of the things that I've seen with the homeless all the time. They don't have a whole lot of things that maybe they should have or could have, but some things they have often more than a lot of people I know who are living in boxes with locked doors, which is a degree of community. And now the irony, of course, is that a number of these homeless people, they're outside because they can't maintain a lot of stable community, but they, even on the street amidst people who are really challenged with respect to community, often because of their addictions, they still have it. It's a remarkable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, ironically, although I had one homeless guy for a while, he got somewhere along the line, someone decided to bless him with a cell phone. I heard the theme of Bonanza coming drifting in through my office door. I thought, oh, well, here we go. Meth addict by night, Bonanza in the late hours of the afternoon. Oh. No, I don't know. I'm glad you got a slot. I mean, people always cry out because of the difficulties of the slots. And often I hear someone was just like, I just thought I'd open it up and check. Oh, there's a slot. I should take it. And you come. So that's good. That's good. Well, what have you found helpful in your life? I mean, you talked about, did you get rid of the smartphone entirely, or did you develop the discipline to, or little? I mean, one of the things I know about 12 steppers is they can get really good at little hacks, because I've known some alcoholics who, on one hand, it's, you know, they've got their badge and they've been sober all this long. And on one hand, that's such an amazing thing. And then when you talk to them about exactly how they do it, have all these little rules for themselves, you know, I don't go here. I do this. And there's sometimes some holes in their little rule network. But what have you learned?
Well, yeah, as far as here's what I've tried. An app, right, that will lock me out during hours or only allow so many hours per day.
Oh.
But so I did that for a while, but then you could turn it off real easy, right?
Yeah.
So then I had my wife set a password. But then at some point I needed to get into the phone and she gave me the password. So now that really hasn't worked. But as far as, you know, people kicking the habits or whatever, there's something at the base of the habit that makes you go there.
Mm.
And that's kind of what I still don't have a grasp on. And maybe it's just that it's so enticing and so easy to slip into. But there's reasons, like I went to celebrity recovery, but I didn't have substance problems.
Right. Right.
It was mostly, I was the codependent in a dependent relationship.
Yep. Yep.
My wife's been sober for 35 years. Right. But I know there's something underlying. And yep. I haven't quite gotten to the core of it yet, but I know God knows. So I basically what it comes down to is just keep plugging away because I know beating myself up over things didn't really help. I haven't figured it out yet in terms of this device. I've looked at other devices. You know, I thought about going back to a flip phone, but texting is a pain in the rear on a flip phone. They have a phone out there that all it does is text, call, and it has maybe directions and a calendar and an alarm, but no internet, basically, or no internet that can be used to get on YouTube or whatever.
Right.
But then that doesn't really, I guess that kind of solves my problem, but I'm still at home where I have access to the attention grabbers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't figured out how to solve my issue with it yet, but I'm still trying. And I realize there's grace and the better I understand God, the better I'll understand myself.
Yeah. And the, you know, the question of the, let's say that, I mean, you said it well, something at the base of the habit. There's always the dream that, and sometimes it's realized. I've seen that in people. You see it, of course, in movies, because movies love to tell a story where there's a breakthrough, and you know, breakthrough is this big word now in the culture, and where there's a breakthrough. And I've spoken with people who have had such breakthroughs that they, you know, there's something down deep that, you know, needed to be addressed. And then once it was addressed, everything else was great, and God bless them. But then there's also, you know, the Pauline thorn in the flesh where, you know, let's say you had the best shrink in the world or the most insightful spiritual director in the world, and they could just put their finger right on that thing at the base. And then you say, okay, now I know what it is. You know, half of solving any problem is figuring out the problem. So now I know what the problem is. Okay. And then God says, no, I'm going to leave you with that problem. It's like,
well, yeah, if you take takes away the problem. Maybe you don't have any, or you wouldn't talk to him again.
Yeah.
Everything solved, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm not going to turn to God for anything.
Yeah.
And one thing I figured out when I was in Celebrate Recovery was I had a list of kind of things that kind of I could see were problems. And at the top of the list was I worry a lot about things. And I also, and that worry changes into kind of like fantasizing about terrible things happening or things going in the worst possible direction or, you know, just it turning into something worse. And, you know, at the end of CR, after you've gone through it, they kind of have you kind of do your testimony. So I like a lot of what I ripped off, like I told you about my family life was because I wrote all of that down, right? And I think that helps. And back when my dad had his issues in the late 60s, my mom, and I didn't know this until, I didn't know why my dad stopped going to church. So when I was about 25, I wrote my mom and I said, can you tell me more about what happened with dad? And she did. She wrote me a great letter and told me her, what she remembers and her, what happened. And I kind of like kicked myself a little bit. I was like, I wish I would have just not been afraid and asked her this a lot sooner. But there was a point at which, and I kind of remember this, where all of us kids were gathered in a room and my mom left and my dad was supposed to tell us, you know, we're getting a divorce. But she and he couldn't do it. He loved us and he didn't, and he was struggling with stuff, but he wouldn't go get help. And she came back and he said, I'll go get some help, and asked her to put his wedding ring back on his finger. So as a 4-year-old, I kind of know something's going on, but I don't know. And I'm afraid to ask because I don't want to upset anybody or whatever. And I kind of have an idea that's at the base of the things that kind of drive me nuts about myself now. Worrying about things, not wanting to face things, not thinking I don't quite understand what's going on. I was always like in a hurry to get grown up because I wanted to catch up with my brother and sisters. But then after, you know, I graduated high school, I didn't know what to do. There wasn't anybody there telling me, okay, go do it, you know? And so I went to school for like 3.5 years to University of Colorado. And I eventually just dropped out because I was just studying while my dad's degree was in. And then somehow or another, I noticed maps and I knew that geography was something that I was interested in. I ended up going to a Lutheran teaching college in Nebraska. And I thought, well, all you can do with geography is be a teacher. So I went to my education 101 class and immediately knew this ain't for me. It was, so I just got my degree, and then it just so happened one of the professors knew a professor at a university back east who was also Lutheran, and he was funneling his best students through them. So I got my master's degree paid for, and then I happened to be getting started after I graduated with my master's. It was around the time when the computer industry was coming, the software for doing mapping on computers was coming into use. I got my first job and they dropped a set of manuals on my desk and said, we think we can use this. Go for it.
Figure it out.
Yeah, which I did, and I've been doing for 30 years, and it's like, yeah, actually do something that I have been interested in since I was a kid.
Wow.
My mom and dad had this set of encyclopedias they got for all my older brothers and sisters. Yeah. So in the 70s, encyclopedias are published in the 50s, aren't the best resource, you know, and there's no internet, right? In the
70s. Right, right.
But there was an atlas that came along with it. And my mom just let me have the atlas. I carried that thing around. and looked at the pictures. I had all the capitals memorized and everything by the time I was about 10 years old. So this is something that, you know, is part of me, that, you know, the Lord does make us to be who we are. And I'm blessed to have found that, because I haven't just had an occupation. I have had a vocation to the degree that I can, you know, that,
yeah.
it's stuff that's interesting to me. And so I've been blessed in that way. And so I don't know. I guess as I'm speaking, I just know I need to count my blessings. You know, it'll count your blessings, and there are plenty that are there. But my other problem about worry, just kind of, it's just the same kind of attention.
Yeah.
Top. Those are the things that get my attention and that I focus on. Yeah, this whole idea of attention and everything being upside down and the meaning crisis, it's just in your little corner of the internet, which to me is like, there's this, it's just the same topic of scale, right? You can't scale to all of your viewers, but you can scale to those that join in.
Yeah.
And run with what you kind of put out there.
Yeah. Well, we're born in the same year. We both grew up in, you know, moderately conservative Christian communities. I mean, there's a fair amount of commonality between us here. So, but also what you said about scale and smallness is, I think, so very true. You can't be friends with a YouTube algorithm. It's not a friendship. And the real life formation, I mean, your story of the, you know, the marital crisis and your father's crisis, I mean, that's a, although it's not uncommon necessarily, but the power of the small to shape us deeply. I mean, you know, you're the number six of six kids, but even a community of eight, it's, you know, we sort of consider it a large family today, but historically speaking, it's not that large. And the power of the relationship between your father and mother and you and your father and you and your mother and you and your siblings and all of those together is just such powerful stuff. And you're exactly right, too, about recovery, that powerful process that has rescued so many people. It happens face to face. And, you know, sometimes it's one on one. Sometimes it's in a little circle where you get one person in the circle will see one thing and another person in the circle will see another thing. And so if it was just one on one, you wouldn't get to see that third thing. And so,
yeah,
no,
that's right.
Small is beautiful and powerful.
Yeah, and the leader of our, the guy that was leading the group, he came to faith in his mid-50s. He was Jewish. And so he did the kind of the formula in that church, which was, you know, the altar call thing. But he told us he didn't really meet Jesus until he had the opportunity to sit around a table for a year with 10 other guys, and just everybody was open about what their issues were, because they were at a point where they knew if they didn't face them openly, it was just going to keep, nothing was going to be solved. It's just going to keep going on.
Yeah. So. Mm. Well, Martin, we've got just a couple minutes left. Do you have any things left on the table that you want to get in before I go on to my next rando?
No, I don't know. I think we've covered enough.
Well, this is just, I'm going to send you the copy of this video. And again, you're absolutely okay to say, nope, you know, I shared too much. I don't want to say, I don't want my face on the internet or anything else like this, but one of the things then maybe it's just because we're in the community of the almost 60. There's one of the real lackings of our contemporary moment is the intergenerational passing of wisdom. And so much of just you talking today in telling your story and telling your stories has been, you know, there's wisdom. Here's wisdom. Because there's, the internet is designed to, the internet is designed to sell and dispense formula for solutions. And what you just shared with us is that, you know, yeah, there's solutions out there for things, but so much of living and finding wisdom in life and finding sanity and healing in life is this, a lot of the stuff that we've known for a very long time, or at least has been practiced for a very long time, is conversation, face-to-face, honesty, sharing, giving our attention to good things and not junk food. So yeah, well, when you look at the video, consider maybe sharing it, because I know there'll be some young men in particular that probably will listen to this and think, yeah, maybe I should join a group or find a friend or change my priorities.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind as I review it.
Okay.
And I will no doubt let my wife have a look at it too before.
Which is wise.
The decision. Right.
Which is wise. So thank you, Martin. I'm so glad you grabbed a slot. That's so good.
Well, thank you too.
All right. We will probably talk to you some other time. You never know.
Who knows?
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.